Vicky. Concluding the meeting with a final 10-minute guest speaker. Speakers will get 1-minute wrap-up cards and a final red card finishing card. If you have already been asked to share at this convention, please decline and give others a chance to share. The topic of the meeting is Quit Playing God, Step 3. The reading comes from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 63. Quit Playing God, the cornerstone. This is how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in the drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed through to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed. If we kept close to him and performed his work well, we established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new powers flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter. We were reborn. Yeah. Okay, I'd now like to call the first speaker, Rob M. from the Gold Coast.
Hello. Hi everybody, my name is Rob and I'm an alcoholic. I'm involved with the AA GC Men's Gold Coast Men's Retreat, which is happening the first week in November. So that's my home group for now. It's keeping me busy enough. Quit Playing God, the reading that was just read is actually one of my favorite parts of the book. So it was apropos when I checked all of yesterday what I was supposed to be sharing on. I said, oh, cool. I like that part. My sobriety date is December 17th, 1994. And I came into this fellowship at the age of 25. And for the first few years, I didn't do anything right, really, except I kept coming back. I didn't like what was going on in my life, but I didn't really see the answers here in the fellowship yet. But I kept coming back, and so if you're new and struggling, I advise you to keep coming back, because I'm standing here with 21 and change years with proof that it works. The concept of handing it over and quit playing God, it's a spiritual journey, you know. And it's my belief that all 7 and change billion people on this planet are on that same path. Most are unaware of it. I certainly was unaware of a path to a power greater than myself when I walked in here. That's not what I was after, and I didn't know that that was the solution. And I didn't know that for many, many years while I was here. I'd heard it. I'd read it in meetings. I had done third steps where I had turned it over and then just went on with my life. Took me about a minute to take control back of my life and run into walls, and I couldn't figure out why life was not working out the way I had envisioned it to work. And so over the past 21 years, it's been a continual journey. You know, it says in the reading, I like that part where it says, it is most good ideas are simple. It's a very simple concept to let God run my life. All of the evidence is, prior to me coming in here, I ran my life into numerous brick walls. I had lots of potential, I was told all my life, and that cut like a knife when I heard it, because I knew it was true, but I couldn't figure out what was wrong. I had no idea. I knew the way I drank and used drugs was alcoholically and crazy. I was one of those crazy young men who just ran as fast as I could, and I broke the law for fun, and ended up in a lot of jails as a result. But I wasn't really willing to listen to anybody. I just wanted to get out of the heat, keep going on my merry old ways. And so when I finally got here, I didn't know it at the time, but I was really under a lot of delusions about what life was and how what I expected out of life. I really had grandiose dreams, but I did not have a path to reach them. I would sort of look at people that I thought had success, maybe a guy driving a nice car or something, and I said, someday I'm going to get there. I just didn't have any plan on having it. I was a rebel without a clue. And so when I came in here, I was a lot sicker, I think, than I realized. And it's taken me a long, long time to peel the layers of the onion off. Even as much as I moved here in 2008, and I promptly got to work to make my life here in Australia, and I had taken hostage with my wife, and she was along for the ride, and then we had some kids, and by 17 years of sobriety, I was had a couple of businesses, because I'm a good alcoholic. I couldn't start one. I had to start like three, and I had two kids, and my wife was losing her mind because I was never home, and both of them were 1 and 2 years of age, and I was 17 years crazy. And one of the guys who had less time than me, arrogant guy, he said, what's going on with you? I said, I don't know. I'm busy. I got kids. I got this. I got that. And he goes, how you doing? I go, you know, doing the best I can. I'm in control. And he said, sounds like you're blocked off from God. Maybe you should just come down and sit on my veranda for a couple days and we'll get you unblocked. I thought, what an arrogant prick. What are you going to sprinkle some magic dust on me? You've only got 12 years. I've got 17. Like, what are you going to teach me? And but I'd learned enough in here to say, yeah, I'll give it a go. And so we sat on his veranda for 2 days, and we read all the black parts of this book. And I'd read them before, but he took the time, and I'd never read them all together with somebody. That just wasn't part of my experience. I had great sponsorship, and it was great when I was working the steps. And then I'd stop, and I'd finish the steps, and I'd go for a while, and then life would get difficult again. And I'd do the steps again, and go for a little while, and then life would get difficult again. And so we sat there and we went through the book, and I heard things and saw things that I never saw. And in the part that they just read is highlighted. My wife said in pink because I got two little girls. That's not why, but it happened to be a pink highlighter. I love the line. It says, when we sincerely, they're talking about putting God in charge of my life. And it says, when we sincerely, and he said, you know what sincerely means? It means without reservation. That means no doubt. Sincerely means no doubt at all. All sorts of remarkable things happen. And he said, you want remarkable things, don't you? Don't you want to have a remarkable life? And he looked at it and he said, it says in here somewhere, I don't know exactly where, that these are drastic proposals. These are drastic. This is a drastic move, really, to say, you know what? I really surrender all of the results up to God. And so, I sort of, amazing, after 2 days of reading this book and going through all the steps, I was unblocked. I was back in the sunlight of the Spirit. And it proved to me once again that it's all inside. It's all in here. It is a God job. It's this journey, and I need to... At that time in my life, that was about 4 or 5 years ago, the other thing he said to me, he said, how many guys are you sponsoring? I said, mate, I got two little kids, I got businesses, If you had asked me to sponsor you at that time in my life, and I meant it, I would have said, it wouldn't be fair for me to sponsor you because I don't really have the time. And I meant that. And so I told him that. And he went, mate, that is not how it works. That is not how it works. You don't get well and then sponsor people. You sponsor people to get well. And so now the direction that you have for the rest of your life, not for the next 90 days, for the rest of your life, if somebody asks you to sponsor them, you say yes. That year, I got 9 sponsees. God's got a sense of humor. My wife's looking at me like, you're going out again? I'm like, I gotta go work for God. But she saw that I was different. And so she said, all right. And kids are crying and puking on her. And she's looking at me going, man, I hope this is gonna work. And, you know, as a family, we've gone on that journey. And now she sees the results, you know. I would say, finally, 2 decades into this thing, you don't have to take that long, I really feel like You know, I go out and do my best every day, and the rest is really up to God. And one of the things I do now, having little kids and something that helps me, I think to myself, because, you know, you drive by on the freeway some days, or you see somebody dies, and you know that's not what they were planning on doing that day. And so I sort of say, well, what would happen? You know, because I gotta take care of my kids, and they need me, and my wife needs me, and I'm the boss, and all my workers need me, and this and that, and I've got all these responsibilities. And I just think to myself, what if I died tomorrow? What would happen to all of them? They would find a way, all of them. The kids that I feel so responsible for, if I wasn't there, would find a way. God would meet them, people would meet them. So while I think it's very crucial, and it is to a certain sense today, tomorrow that could change. And so it helps me to sort of say, you know what? Even if I'm not here, they're all going to be okay. And I just need to leave that in God's hands. Because I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be here tomorrow. And so I have to have that faith that if I'm not, you know, I've tried to do the right things. You know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. I've listened to a few people and I've tried to set it all up so that if that happened, look, none of us get out alive, including my kids. I think, well, what if I, you know, that little girl that was lost the other day. Wow. I could sit here. Today things are going really well, but I don't know how. One day at a time I would figure it out how I'd be okay with all, you know, things like that happening to me. So I don't have any pressing issues like that today, but you know, I really know in my heart of hearts that God's in charge and I can relax and take it easy. I really can. And I've also learned a really valuable lesson in here, is that getting my own way for most of my life has been the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I don't know what's good for me. I don't know what's good for me. All my life I went for the things that I thought were good for me and they were the worst thing for me. And in here, you guys have given me crazy direction that didn't make any sense to me, and I did it anyway, and I got a better result. So it proved to me that I had no idea what's good for me. So while I'm out there in the world struggling and everything to get what's mine and keep it and everything, and stuff starts to fall away and I don't want to let it go, you know, I love my friend Martina. She said everything she ever let go has claw marks in it. That used to be the case. Today, maybe a couple scratches. But most of the time, I just, you know, after I get to that point, I let it go because God's in charge. And to me, that's the path for all of us. I don't care whether you're in or out of this program. And that helps me have some compassion for the other people that don't have what we have. They don't get to huddle and get this message. They've got to deal with their fears every day. And it's scary out there. So my time's up. It was great to be here this morning. Thanks for letting me share.
Can I get Lisa S. from Burley, Brunswick Heads, please?
Hi. Hey everybody, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Lisa.
Home group's big book study on a Wednesday in Brunswick Heads, and I'm very nervous. When I was asked to share this meeting, and I said, yeah, what it's about, and he said, God, step three, and I went, right, okay, can do that. But it wasn't too long ago that I didn't have a God. I was a drunk, I was a hopeless kind of drunk, and when I came into AA, I thought, I don't need the steps. I don't need a God. Well, I certainly don't need a sponsor. And how wrong I was. I was wrong, obviously. And so I got a sponsor. I got a home group. And I started my steps. And I loved the beginning of the big book where you got the history. I thought, this is great. Loved all that. And with step one, managed to get through that. Step two, yep, I was willing. I wasn't willing, to be honest. I said to my sponsor, don't know about this willing bit. And she said, are you willing to be willing? And I said, oh, I suppose I could do that. Yeah, I can be willing to be willing. So we did that, and it was all good. And step three came along. And that's when I had to turn my will over to a higher power. And I was like, I didn't know anything about religion. I wasn't brought up with religion. I believed in something, but I didn't quite know what. And I was suddenly asked to turn my will over to whatever. Well, for me, it just seemed to whatever. And we read the big book that's just been read here today, and there's a prayer, the third step prayer, and my sponsor, she got this wee candle out, and I was like, oh no, what's all this? I actually left my sponsor's house, went home, to have a think about whether I was willing to take this step, whether I was willing to have, to turn my will over to something that I knew nothing about. And I did some reading and I did some talking to other members, mostly women, sorry guys, but we have a good strong women where I come from, so I spoke to a lot of them. And yeah, I was prepared to, because what I was left to at the end of the day, it was either go to AA, have a higher power and a sponsor and do all the suggested things, or go home, get drunk and die. They were my options. So lucky for me, my option was go to AA. And thank goodness I did, because, you know, standing here today, very nervous, looking at all those people, I'm really grateful that I actually took that option. And these days now I also have sponsees who I take through the big book. And because it says, you have to give to others what was given to you so freely. And for me, it was given so freely. You know, my sponsor, she's a lovely woman, and she was kind, she was patient, she rolled her eyes a few times, but that's okay. Most people do at me sometimes. But if I learn a lot, and I come to meetings and I hear other people's journeys, and I hear a lot, the previous speaker was speaking about, you know, relax, take it easy. You know, these days I can relax, and I can, because I know God's on my side. You know, I've got unconditional God in my life today. And just as I was coming up to share, I did the Serenity Prayer. And I know he's with me all the time. Whenever I ask, and I do remember to ask every morning, you know, where do you want me to be of most use today? And that's my first thing I say in the mornings. And then I get on with my day. And if my day's going really rubbish, I look at the day, and 10 times out of 10 really, I'm running the show. And of course it's going to be rubbish, because I ran the show so many years when I was drinking, it was rubbish. Suddenly I led a higher power in my life, and it's not so rubbish. And it gets better and better every day. So I can stop my day and I can do another prayer and say, you know what, I'm going to turn it over again. And I do. And, you know, in a couple of days, if I'm running really rough, it gets better. And it's not through my doing at all. Me standing here sober, talking to people in this room, this isn't my doing. I didn't wake up one day and go, I think I'm going to go to AA and I'm going to tell everybody how it all goes. That wasn't me. You know, I would be sitting in a bar drunk 24/7. That was me. And now I can actually stand here and not be embarrassed by talking about God. If someone asks me about, I call it God, my God, of my understanding, I'm quite happy to explain, because that's what helps me through each and every day. And it's one day at a time that I have. And in that one day, if I can be kind, patient, generous to another person, not just alcoholics, but, you know, I've got a wee neighbour down the road who often is so grumpy, you don't even look at her. And sometimes go, oh, hi, how are you? And I actually do mean it. Whereas before I would just go, oh, God, that grumpy old woman, I can't stand you. But now I've got that generosity where I can give back to others. And that's what I learned from the third step. So back to the candle, I did go back to my sponsor's house. We did light a candle. We got on our knees and we said the step three prayer. And thank goodness I did. And I'm really grateful. Thank you for having me to speak. And thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. I'd like to now call Alex from Green Slopes to share, please.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alex. I'm an alcoholic. And Green Slopes on Thursday night is my home group. My sobriety day is November the 5th, 2005. And I'm afraid that I have to say that I'm here, sober, and speaking before you only by the grace of God. Little bit of my background in drinking. I had lots of experiences. I started drinking when I was 8. I grew up in a drinking family. But I also grew up in a family of believers, and for some reason my nature was against the nature of the rest of my family in regards to God and in regards to drinking and in regards to doing life. I got involved with the wrong crap. I got involved with more stuff besides alcohol, and I had the opportunity to have a number of rock bottoms. I had a suicidal thinking. I tried a number of times, and I was lucky that I wasn't successful. I remember a number of times after some of the attempts opening my eyes, and even though I was this being, declaring publicly that I didn't believe in that thing called God, I would ask, you know, I would ask, why am I still here? Why am I still here? And I remember several times in you know, in the different rock bottoms, I remember calling my mom. You know, I remember calling my mom, and before, sometimes in the middle, and sometimes after the trouble, I used to call my mom, and I used to go, "Hey, mom, I'm having this. I'm getting, you know, troubles, blah 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 blah." And it was funny because I knew what my mom's answer was gonna be, and it was always the same. And I remember a man saying, you know, go on your knees and pray. And my answer was always the same. You know that thing called God is not for me. That works for you. Cutting long story short, I walk into these rooms, and I remember when I walk into this room, for some reason, the very first thing that it was just in front of the door was the Serenity Prayer. And I don't know how many words the Serenity Prayer has, but the only word that I saw was God. And it makes me feel really uncomfortable. And I have lots of very negative thoughts. And once again, only by the grace of God, I sat in that meeting. I have heard plenty of really good things that have helped me, and one of those ones was, you know, willingness, open-minded, and honesty. And what I would say that was one of the keys for my freedom was what you could see in the steps. And if you give yourself the opportunity to go through the big book with a sponsor, you will read a number of times, God of your understanding. For me, that was freedom, because I used to think the God thing was only for this denomination or for these kind of people, or if I behave in this way, I don't think there is going to be such a thing as a God for someone like me. And I used to, the 000 God, only when I was in trouble. And I had an experience when my brother, he was the one who called me to, you know, he was the one who brought me to AA. He was a year younger than me. He had been in AA for about 3 years, And after my last drink, I ended up in his bed. He was the one who passed me that message, and I had the privilege of walking through the doors. And I've been I've been learning that I'm a work in progress. You know, the job in me hasn't been done. Work in progress. And just to say goodbye, something that it has helped me big time is one, to realize that there is a God, and two, that I'm not it. That's a good beginning for me. Thanks.
Can I ask Tammy from Ipswich to come up, please?
Morag needs to quit playing God. I specifically asked not to share. Oh, God. I'm Tammy, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Oh, God, I love the topic. I do. I guess for me, my best thinking got me here. I really don't want to be up here right now, but anyway. It's embarrassing when you're so nervous about this public speaking thing. I should be next door, that removing fear one. That's where I should be, but I came back here because I couldn't make up my mind, too many choices, and now look what happens. Might just pop next door. For me, I guess today, you know, quit playing God. When I let go of everything, and it says it in the last meeting when in this room, you know, either God is or he isn't, and I have to believe that he is. And when I let go and quit playing God, wonderful things happen for me. And I find it more so in the workplace, you know, when I try and control things. And I have to believe, and it's happened just recently, you know, I have to come back to thinking, well, God's got this picture, God's got this plan. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. So it's kind of a relief, you know, and I have to either trust that or not. And I'm either trusting it or I'm fighting it, you know. I'm either trying to control it or I'm, you know, deciding whether I'm going to just let God have it, you know. And I do like what Martina says about anything she's let go, you know, it's got claw marks in it. And I so get that, you know. I do it on a regular basis. I'll let it go and then I'll grab it back. And it's like when I get bored, you know, it's like, oh, what's in this box? You know, I'll just open this up and have a little play with this again. And throw it around and mull it around for a little while and just see if I can make something, you know, a drama or a problem in my head. But I do like it. And I really, I had a situation where, you know, I was put in a position with work that I really didn't want. It wasn't going to my plan, you know. And I was getting resentments left, right and centre with management. And I wasn't in a very good place. And then it occurred to me after I did an inventory on it, and it just occurred to me that, you know what, God's got this picture. And I don't know what God's will is for me. Like, for some reason, I'm not meant to be, you know, on that flight at that preferred time. He wants me on a different flight or whatever, you know. I don't know. And then for a moment, I had this glimpse, and it's like that movie, you know, Sliding Doors. And you know, it's like, well, I thought to myself, well, if the plane goes down on Tuesday night, that would be, you know, why God doesn't want me on that flight, obviously, you know. And if you could have that proof, you know what I mean, like that sound proof, but to have that faith prior to that and to completely trust that, you know, God's got this, I'll just quit playing God, hands off, and, you know, and great things will happen. And I love it in the moments that I do. I have that clarity, and that's the program. You know, that's when I'm in a fit spiritual condition, obviously, because when I'm not, I'm trying to control everything. And then I'm in a world of pain because things aren't going my way, you know, and that control, you know, we all have it. If you're not doing what I want you to do, then I'm going to let you know about it, you know, and I'm going to have a little tantrum. And all I'm doing is hurting me because, you know, it's not going to change anything out there. All I can do is change what's in here. So, I love the topic, and I'm going to end on that note. And thanks very much. Thanks.
coming. Just a little bit of housekeeping. Could the owners of a Barina Rego 336 JNJ and Nissan Ute with Rego 161 EIN Finelli please move their cars that are blocking the loading dock out the back? If anyone's in the room, if they could do that now, that would be great. And I'll call John from the Sunday Big Book Study, please.
That's you, John.
How you going?
Good, how are you?
Good. Yeah, John O'Leary, alcoholic. Yeah, member of Southport Big Book Study on a Sunday night. At this time, so just moved to the Gold Coast because God had another plan for me, and here I am right this minute. And great spirit in this place, and thanks very much to the organisers. Feels really good to be here. And yeah, and you're all a good bunch, aren't you? Yeah. So this area brings back a lot for me. It's where I sobered up. 23 years ago, and I'm in the councillor at Biala, and I answered a few of the questions on the list right, and I said I must be an alcoholic, and I sensed some relief. I didn't know what that meant, but she gave me a pathfinder and said it'd be a good idea to get Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember looking at the meetings list, and I'm pretty important, special sort of person. So I looked at the meetings around this area and had a hell of a lot up at Woodridge, and I went, well, I'm not going there, you know, that's full of that type of people. I'm pretty special. I'll go to one that, should do me, a bit of an upper class meeting, which I thought. So I went up here to Mount Warren Park, which is now closed, but it was just another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where I got the message. And you know, I'm very, very grateful, and I was thinking a lot about, by the way, the finish of that story is I became a home member of Woodridge Wednesday night for 6 or 7 years. So I soon started to realise that, I'm an alcoholic, and other people who say they are, we're all very similar, we're all tarred with the same brush, there or thereabouts. So I was thinking a lot during the previous meetings about how grateful I am to the quality of good sobriety. And, being blessed to get the sponsor that I did at 3 months sober, because I was starting to talk myself out of this joint. Yeah, I'd be jumping up and telling you guys what you should be doing and sitting down, and then someone would cheer, and I'd be starting to think to myself that I might just be an alcoholic, you know, that I only barely qualified to be in this joint. You all needed it. There was no doubt about that. But I wasn't too certain, and we met at about when I was 3 months sober, and first thing we did, we spent a lot of time talking about acceptance, you know, relating around step one. So I'm very, very grateful to the quality of that. The other thought that struck me, and I met someone else, there's someone in this room who knows me, and one of my second thoughts was, because I've been involved in Junior Chamber of Commerce and things like that when I was out there, I looked around the rooms, I thought, I'm going to be president of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's not much competition, with respect, everyone. now I know today, you know, being involved in service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I am, I'm the delegate of Area C now, and I'm very grateful that. It's a race to the bottom because of our upside down service structure where, you know, we serve the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. So good sponsorship was really, really vital for me. It's what I needed. And he asked me the question, you know, he said to me, do you want the best that's available in Alcoholics Anonymous? And of course, how can you not answer that with a yes, you know, as clever as I was. So he said, let's start on the steps. And so the process began, you know, that process at the beginning. And one of the other conditions he applied was a month at a time to do each step. And I remember driving home the first time he told me, I thought, this bloke's a bit slow. There's something wrong, you know, because I'd already done them. You know, I'd already read the steps, so therefore I'd done them. So anyway, so we came, yeah, we went through a month at a time the steps, and coming to step three, he says, so you tell me you have a faith, you have a belief, and now here's the chance to practice that faith, you know, coming to step three, handing my life and my will over. And I've had plenty of chances to practice that, because my playing God is, you know, when I'm going tough or things are going tough, I'll reach out. When things are going well, I'll say to God, just relax, sit down. I'm taking care of it. It's all pretty good, you know. That's got a lot better. It's got a lot better, and I'm working on that all the time. So let go, let God is an ongoing thing for me. It's one of the challenges I find in sobriety, but I don't sweat it. You know, he said I suffer. He talked about suffering the human condition, and a lot of the great people in society, other than alcoholic Gandhi and all them, they all struggle the same struggle. So that's my thing. The other part of playing God is I have to always be aware that when I'm talking to another alcoholic, I am not God. You know, so I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a counsellor, I'm not any of those things. I've got one story, and that's sobriety. Thanks.
Can I ask Sue to come up, please?
Hi, I'm Sue, and I'm an alcoholic. And I really don't want to speak, but I will. I'm at rehab at Munya in Red Hill, and I don't know how qualified I am to speak of God. I went into detox at Munya and had no idea what a detox was all about, and I dried out for 7 days, and then I applied to go down to the program and still had no idea what the program was about, but I knew it was run by the Salvation Army, and I thought, fantastic, I'm going to get God in my life. I'm going to get faith, and I'm going to be one of these Christian people whose lives are so happy and perfect. You know, I had no idea. So we had to start off and we had to go to church, and, you know, everybody sat in rows and they sung these hymns, and I thought, this is going to come to me. What do they say? Fake it till you make it. And I thought, this is going to happen. I'm going to finally become a Christian. I'm going to join the Salvation Army and my life's going to be fantastic. So then we had chapel on Tuesday nights and everybody sang songs and clapped hands, and I've never been able to sing and clap hands at the same time. So I thought, I'm going to fail at this. How on earth am I going to do it? And I kept on looking at the Salvation Army people and the women who'd come in and serve the cupcakes, and all the ex-residents of the place, they'd come along, and I'm thinking, they're Christians, they've got God in their life, it's going to be fantastic. So it still wasn't happening, and then after about week 5 I got to go to my first AA meeting and then heard about God and just went, oh, here we go again, more God, what am I going to do? And really started to panic, thinking, where am I going to find this thing called faith? When am I going to become a Christian? So I continued going, that fake it till you make it, and then somebody said to me, and I questioned God, and somebody said to me, God's actually just the lazy term for a higher power. And I started thinking, oh, I can get my head around that, but what is a higher power? You know, is it the trees? Is it the sky? Is it, you know, what is it? So I was talking to my sponsor about this, and I said to her, you know, everything happens for a reason. I'm going to find the reason here. And she looked at me and said, you know, maybe that's your higher power speaking. And I thought, oh, okay, I can start getting a grip on this. So I went back to church and I went back to chapel, and whenever they used the word God, I always thought, ah, my higher power. And I work with a caseworker who's incredibly religious, and I always go, oh, yes, God, yes, God. And she thinks that I'm talking about her God, and I haven't been game enough to tell her that it's my higher power. But the rooms of AA have really started showing me that there is a power greater than ourselves. I went to Soberfest. My sponsor took me there, and I got through the first meeting, and the second meeting I thought, this is a cult. We've all thought it. They're all into God. You know, it's all going to happen here. And then I got to the third meeting and looked at everyone and thought, I want what they want. They're working with their higher power, and it's their higher power that's going to get them through. And just recently we had someone from the rehab bust. And it really, she was a really prominent figure at the rehab, and everybody believed that she had it and she was going to be successful. And she busted, and it just completely floored me, because she was going to church, she was going to meetings, she was doing all this stuff. And what she had to lose was, if she walked out of that place, she was going to go to jail, she was going to lose her 6 children. And her whole life was going to be a disaster. And somebody said to me that she didn't have the higher power in her life. She had no spirituality. And I saw her give away absolutely everything because she had no spirituality. So I went to the spiritual experience in the back of the book and read that. And I had that psychic change. You know, I finally realised that it was the higher power and spirituality that was going to get me through this journey. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Sue. Can we have Kingsley from Bayside Beginners?
Hi everyone, I'm Kingsley, I'm an alcoholic. As I said, my home group's Bayside Beginners, so I'm about to run away and open it up. I really, really identified with Rob in a big way, because when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, alcoholism had taken away from me probably what I think is the greatest thing it could have taken. I never accumulated anything, but it took away from me my youth. And, you know, there was no freedom in my youth, and I too had this great potential, you know. I got in and I didn't really have any problem with the steps. I didn't have any, certainly didn't have any problem with this idea of, what was it? It's so far away now I can't read it. Turning my will and my life over to the care of a power greater than myself as I understand it. But I didn't actually know what that entailed. I had no idea. What happened to me when I did the steps was that I got a new employee. You know, it was God working for me. And I went along like that for a long time and said about, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous to get for me. I didn't come into Alcoholics Anonymous to help another human being or to serve a higher power of any description. And it all kind of went all right, you know. I won the university medal in sobriety and it was pure self-will. I ran on self-will in AA, spruiking the steps, you know. It was just mad. One of the reasons to come to AA was to get a wife, you know, a girlfriend. Wish it had stayed that way. It became wife. And I achieved that. But I wasn't doing any of it for anyone else. It was purely for me. And we had some children and I didn't get the child I want. You know, I read this sort of, you know, God gets me the parking spot I want. That's not it. That's not it. You know, when I get a good parking spot, it's, oh, God's looking at, I got a ripper, by the way. It's right across the road. You know, God's obviously looking after me, you know. But I didn't realise that that's not it. There was no humility. I had no humility about my life, about my relationship with you or my relationship with God. And, you know, I got this child that wasn't what I ordered. You know, I ordered a good one and I got a really seriously disabled child who's completely ruined any dreams I had of what my life was going to be. And it changed for me because I got to this point where I seemingly had everything. I had a great job. They were sending me to the States 5 times a year for training, you know, business class, bloody great wife, you know, had the family, all the rest of it, had my AA meetings and, you know, but I was suicidal at 10 years of sobriety. And at that point in time, I realized that what was missing for me was any form of surrender to you know, the predicament that I was in. Surrender that alcoholism is going to kill me whether I'm drinking or sober. And that was a major milestone in my recovery, because from there I was sort of able to turn to the higher power, you know, that God is my employer, that this is about serving that higher power, you know. And so that was a big change for me, a major point, you know, when it's like, okay, God's given me this child for some kind of reason. And I sort of knew that I convinced myself that I had this child because there was something that I had to learn in this life that I couldn't do without it. And it was quite a while later that I learned, I believe I figured out what that is, and that in my life, everything was a puzzle. Even the 12 steps. Alcoholism, it's just a puzzle. You solve it. You apply the 12 steps, you're going to solve the puzzle. Uni was just a puzzle. My job's just a puzzle. Children are a challenge, you know. It's just another word for puzzle. And I'd lived everything as if it was, I've got to solve this, I've got to solve the next, I've got to solve for me. And I learned that everything is in fact a gift. That not, you know, my youngest son, no one can solve him, he's just unsolvable. And good doctors tell you they've got no idea. And so it's like, well, if he's not a puzzle, what is he? And the answer that came to me was that he's a gift. So, you know, then I started thinking, well, what else is a gift? Maybe my marriage is a gift. Maybe my alcoholism is actually a gift by which I can live a lifestyle that brings me closer to a higher power and also closer to you people. And also, you know, people are pretty desperate when they walk in here and we're able to help them. So thanks a lot.
Christine from Harvey Bay. Christine.
I'm Christina, I'm an alcoholic.
And,
you know, funny that you asked me to share on this one, actually. I'm coming up to step three, and I've got a shocking habit of playing God. I've got a family who, my mother and my brother who heavily rely on me. It's difficult for me not to sit there and map out all the pieces and you know, where they have to go. But I have to learn, that it really is God's will that needs to be done, not mine. And, I'm learning that as I'm coming further into recovery. And I'm 16 months sober now. And I've been in the rooms for 2 years. But I came in playing God. I sat in my first meeting and I looked at the steps and I just went, well, yes, I'm powerless over alcohol and my life's unmanageable. That's step one done. And I honestly believe at the time that step two and three didn't apply to me. So God could sit on the wall and leave me alone. So that was step two and three done. And that was 15 minutes into the meeting. I thought I was going great. Needless to say, I slipped up. Every day it has to be that conscious decision for me. And I find that when my life is running rough, it's because I have taken back control. I travelled down here the other night, and it took every ounce of courage to put my foot on the accelerator to get down the Bruce Highway. But I had to sit there and go, no, I'm either going to get there safely or I'm not, but either way, I've got to start somewhere. I'm an extremely grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous today. Alcoholics Anonymous really has given me my life back. It's allowed me to have a life and not live for the bottle. I actually have things beyond the bottle now that I live for. I'm going to be quiet on that note. And I thank you guys for putting this on. Somewhere to come beyond Harvey Bay. Get a bit of recovery. So thank you guys.
Thank you, Christina. Chad, did you want to share? No worries at all. Boris from Springwood. Where is he gone?
No,
isn't he gone?
The guy in the
Which one? Sorry, I can't see your name. The gentleman with the hat on? Yes. Would you like to share?
Hey everybody, my name's John, I'm an alcoholic. What an amazing gathering of people. It always gets me when I come here, when I get to spend time with you guys. This one? Just the amount of pain that I'm surrounded by, you know, like, it always breaks my heart that the only reason you guys are here to support me is because you've been through hell, all of yous. And when you think back, a guy called Bill in 1933 really got the whole Washingtonian thing, which was the Oxford group and whatever, and decided to do something with it. Step one, by the time I got into HADS, absolutely, there's no doubt about it. My life was uncontrollable. I had no grasp on reality anymore. I didn't really know much about AA before I got into HADS, and there was a book, which I later got to find out was called The Big Book. It looked a lot bigger than it is. It's only 164 pages, but it's pretty thick, you know. I thought, oh, here's a read. This will take me a day or two. Read the doctor's opinion. Oh, I've read the foreword 1, 2, 3, and 4 because it's there. And doctor's opinion, oh yeah, it could be something there. And then I read Bill's story, and I don't know why, it must just have been where I was at that particular time, 6th of July 2008. And it just touched something that it's like this spiritual sickness that I'd never understood before all of a sudden became very clear to me. And then, of course, you get to chapter 2, there is a solution, and I'm on my knees in this ward where there's 4 other beds, you know, there's 4 beds, 3 of them are out there. I'm in this bed, right? And for me, the change was very profound, it was very sudden, and since that day I've never had to have another drink to get by in life. And quite literally, my childhood was a very disturbed one. In the 1970s, I had the 4 demons that nobody spoke about: physical, mental, spiritual, and sexual abuse. I was a very small child, learned very early how to put faces on. And I lived my life in constant fear. I was always trying to please the next person, trying to, you know, like always figure out what's next so I was right and I was ready to take care of it. And so I wouldn't be seen to be little, that I wouldn't be belittled, that I wouldn't be seen to be wanting, that I wouldn't be seen to be less than all of these other big people, because even though I'm rather tall now and I've broadened out in time, I was very tiny as a child. When I left school, end of grade 8, I was the shortest person in high school. There was nobody smaller than me. I was the tiny, tiny little kid, you know? And I know it seems surprising, but I was. And I was horrified all the time, and I was petrified of everybody and everything. I see a lot of people nodding, so it's nice to know I'm not an orphan with this particular disease. I was diseased against the world. Anyway, I get onto my knees and in at HADS. And the rest of the room went dark except for where I was. And it got bright, and I mean really bright. And I felt a very physical presence of somebody put that arm around me and say, "It'll be all right, John." And for the first time in my life, sober, I felt at ease. It was the first time, and now I've experienced it through excessive drug use, I've experienced it through excessive alcoholism, but it's always just before you flip into the blackout stage. You know, when you finally get there, guys, yahoo, I'm finally feeling, then boom, you know, wake up the next day, what happened, Jesus Christ, you know? And then, you know, you look at whoever, like, oh yeah, I took hostages, you know, and you'd wake up in the morning, you just kind of like see how she was, you know, because you really got no clue. You got no clue, you know, I mean, sometimes I think they just, you know, like made it up to make you feel bad because they knew that you had a blackout, you know. but I don't know, it's I owe my life. Strangely enough, I owe my life to the amount of pain that every last one of you that's sitting here has gone through. And I don't know if anybody can actually understand the amount of love and humility I feel to sit in a room with so many beautiful people. But, oh God, these guys are awesome. I do thank you.
Loretta from Ipswich, would you like to share? Don't smile and duck your head there, George. Up you come.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm George. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here. Heard some really good things already today in step three. Yeah, I can't afford to play God. In my drinking, and you know, I can still be guilty of doing a little bit of self-will here and there. You know, I was always running on self-will, and it's the results weren't pleasant, really. It is quite nerve-wracking actually standing up here now, isn't it? Yeah, I think I might. How's about half and half? Okay, so yeah, for me, when I first came into the room, so agnostic, I think, is the term for it. So I knew of God, but I never connected to. And I got to a certain point in my life where I thought, because of what was happening, you know, the things that were going wrong that weren't going my way, the things that were happening on the piss, this, that, and the next thing, that was my punishment. So to me, I was fearful of God. My God, or the idea to me for God was punishing. And but by the time I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous, mainly for the second time round, where I was ready to take the cotton wool out of my ears and listen, you know, I slowly began a recovery towards having a God in my life. And you know, as it says in that book, one of my favourite parts is where it says, as we drew near to him, drew nearer, he disclosed himself to us. And that has been my experience. My current sponsor, she said, you know, your dependence has to become on God. And I know God speaks through people. And, you know, it was coming into these rooms and people had something that I wanted. I clearly knew I didn't have it. And by the time I came back in the second time around, I was suicidal. I didn't want to be here. I had no other options. But I'd been into AA prior, a couple of years prior to that. I went to about 4 meetings and I walked out thinking, if I remember what people have said when I go and drink, I'll be okay. You know, I was arrogant. I wasn't ready to hear it. But about by the time I came back in next time, you know, I think that first time I went in, it was enough to just plant a seed. I think my drinking was wrecked for the next 4.5 years till I came back in. But I was ready the next time I came back in, you know. And every day it's a practice for me to be on my knees just to hand my will and my life over to the care of a God that I understand. It's not perfect. There are some days where I don't do it. And the good thing about this program is I can start my day at any time throughout the day. You know, my God is one that I understand, that understands me and works for me. And, you know, the fact that I'm still here, I've stayed in the rooms this time around, and the obsession to drink's been taken away from me, that there's definitely a higher power working in my life, because I could not do that. I could put the bottle down, but I couldn't stay stopped. And the other thing too is, if I'd get a couple of days out, this is before I came into AA, when I knew obviously it was a problem but didn't want to do anything with it, I could put the bottle down for like a couple of days, but then I'd celebrate by getting smashed. and that's how I did it. That's exactly how I did it. I was like, sweet, I can stop. So I can obviously stop whenever I want. So I'll go get smashed. But yeah, it would just be getting on that merry-go-round. You know, that was my solution to everything. And my life revolved around the booze. I was always on self-will. I didn't have a higher power in my life. I knew how to sort things out. It's okay, I've got it. And then I came into AA and learnt that, you know, I know absolutely nothing. And today I know of myself, I am nothing. I need a higher power. I need to put this program into action on a daily basis. I need to be in these rooms. I need to hear what other people have to say, because when I came in here, you people talked about things that I related to, you know, and I identified with people when I came in here. I wasn't telling anybody before I came into these rooms what was going on in here. No way. I knew there was something wrong with me, but I wasn't going to tell people there was, you know what I mean? And most people could tell there was anyway, just by my behaviour, my actions, my drinking and everything like that. So today I've got a very different life, you know, one day at a time. And, you know, I've done what's been suggested. I've also tried to see if what you're telling me is true. So I've gone out on self-will and done things and it hurts. So I get back on program, you know, and that's just my experience. That's the way it's been for me. But my life's been absolutely tremendous being in these rooms, you know. I've met some fantastic people. I've got a solution that works in all areas of my life. I have a higher power today. And, you know, I don't have to run everything. I don't have to be in charge of everything. I don't have to be in control of everything, you know. It's just, I'm just responsible for me, my recovery, helping others where I can and, you know, just trying to do the best I can. And as my sponsor said, you know, everyone's got a best and everyone's best is different, so don't compare yourself, you know. So yeah, very grateful to be here. Thanks everyone so far for everything that I've heard this morning and the shares and that. I totally understand, it's quite nerve-wracking standing up here, but I think I'm done now, so thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin, would you like to share?
Quite minutes, bloody hell. I'm Kevin, alcoholic. I better hurry up. When I first got here, I couldn't even talk, but pretty hard to shut me up these days. So anyway, it's been a great meeting, great setup. Thanks to all that have helped put this thing together. It's a lot of work involved. Anyway, step three. Lack of power is my dilemma. Oh, God, I've been thinking of things as people have shared and things I've heard from others, things that have been passed to me. I mean, it's. I caught my disease listening to you lot, and I stayed around long enough to catch a solution, but it's been very slow for me. God, I thought I was. There's an old fellow used to, you know, Pete, he's gone now, but he said, you know, he's a very, very slow learner and a very fast forgetter. And I used to, but my thought was the other way around, but I've come to find out that that's true for me. As for God, I had a lot of issues with that. Most people do, I guess, but I had a belief when I got here. I had two, actually. There was Huey that would make it rain so I could go and get on the piss. And then there was the dude that was out to get me for all the mistakes I made. So this was my basic higher power or God belief when I arrived. After I stayed here for a while, listening to you lot, you know, I got to find out that, you know, I can make my own up. And what was a great relief, actually, I went to see that, I don't know about you, but Star Wars, and I used to like going to movies. It was a great place to get away from everyone. and I watched that Star Wars, and I could never think of that force be with you. I thought, that's cool. There was a point where I thought, mate, if I got enough force, I could levitate you lot. anyway, don't worry about it. I'm mad. The force. yeah, you'd have to be well to be here. Anyway, over time, a lot of times I used to wonder, I'd hear people say they know what God's will is and things like that. Well, my sponsor, he went to this Archbishop Mons and he was asking, what the hell's God's will for me? And took a few weeks and eventually lost the plot, and this friend of AA wouldn't tell him. And he said, every day I wake up in the morning and I ask, I have no idea what God's will for me for this day will be. Because no one has any idea what's coming for every day that I come to. So I had to come to realise that whatever it is, it's going to be what it is when it shows. Now, I ran it with, had a lot of fears, you know. And anyway, I learnt these couple of things. A couple of years up the track, for God, I remember someone saying, you've got this trouble of realising, you know, you're not in charge. And I wrote on the, he wrote on the mirror, and I did the same. I looked it up in the mirror for about 5 years and said, dear Kevin, I don't need your help today, love God. Now, I had to remind myself each morning to look at that, And remember that I was not in charge. The world does not go the way I like, and people do not do what I want, you know. That was a great help. Just a reminder. It didn't stop me wanting to change the world, but, gradually over time I come to, I suppose, it's simplified, I guess, as time goes on. The reality is there is a power. My trouble is I've got to remember it's not me. I forget. This ego thing, by the way. This thing doesn't leave. It keeps rising. And as they say, the ego eases God out. I don't want to fight the world. I don't want to be in charge. Not really. Not really. But there's a part of me that really does. I like that movie, Bruce Almighty. I could put myself right there with Brucey. I just think where you had God power, part the ways, get all the cards anyway. All that sort of stuff is just, it's a fantasy world. It'll be a wonderful place, If I could make the world at peace and everyone, lovey-dovey, it'd be a lovely place to be, but that's not reality. And the trouble is I have is facing reality. I still have trouble with people, place and things at times. I don't want to fight anybody or anything, but I still manage to get into disputes. I tried so hard to become a saint, but I failed miserably. It's the truth is I'm not fully completed. And I guess I heard a priest or someone say, he said, we were never made perfect. There's some old scripture and it says, when God created the world, he made the animals all perfect, the trees were perfect, the ocean, blah, blah. Everything was perfect. When he made us, we were not perfect. We were made incomplete. And my journey is to continue on this journey and hopefully improve a little bit a day at a time to be part of this world. So thank you all for being here.
Amy, would you like to share? Hey, Amy. Megs, would you like to share?
Hey, Megs.
Hi, I'm Megs, alcoholic.
Hi, Megs.
Wow, I'm really nervous. This is my second time at Try and Recovery. And I must admit, the first time looking at the steps, I had no knowledge about them. I guess I thought I had to read them and that was about it. This time round, I realised that there was a program towards it, and it wasn't about just reading each step. There was an action I needed to put into it. I came in, I guess, willing. I saw that it was around God, a higher power, and I was willing to look further into that. I knew I needed to find something better than me, bigger than me, because I had lost total control of myself and my life around me was just becoming a disaster. I thought I had it all together. I had a family, I had a house, I had a daughter that I always wanted, but as much as I was, I guess, feeding them, I wasn't really keeping the family together. I was only actually destroying it. So for me, getting to step three, I guess I thought I needed to find what my higher power had defined. My will, what will I had to give up and hand over to God. And in that, I started to realise that I actually once did have a connection and did believe in God. So I thought that this was going to be somewhat easy to turn my will over because I had already felt that there was that connection, but somewhere along the line I had lost it. I'd be lying if I said it was easy, because even though I knew that somewhere in my life there was that connection, it was then having that process, I had to put in process of like then handing certain things over and losing the control that I wanted and what I had lived from basically the age of 10 when I decided that I no longer wanted to believe that there was a God, because in my head, if there was, he, I guess, hated me and had put me in situations that I wanted to dislike him. I wanted him out of my life. So in my teenagers, I blocked that off completely. And so it was a matter of now giving myself the opportunity, giving myself the permission to just let go a little bit and stop controlling everything and I guess looking within myself and not looking within here, but looking within here and realizing that he was there for good and he was only going to give me good things in the future if I just let go. And it's been 9.5 months and yeah. And it's been a roller coaster ride. There's days where I just want to go nut. It's all me, but yeah, a little bit, and I'm here and I'm really enjoying today, so thank you.
Thank you, Megsy. I'd like to call the final guest speaker for the night, for the afternoon, Jessie from Yeronga Big Book Study.
Is this meant to be up here? Hi everyone, my name's Jesse, I'm an alcoholic. I'll just read a section out of the big book. It's me reverting to type when I'm not doing God's will. Can everyone hear me? Because I've got a sore throat, so... Yeah? Cool. First requirement that we can be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. He's forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, an actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. And then the next paragraph is just that, glory like on a next level. Just a short story about my insanity and how, in my pathway to getting in here. I was an apprentice chef when I was 17, and that meant drugs and alcohol were on tap, and the alcohol was free. I did that for 12 months and ended up in a psychiatric unit on an involuntary treatment order for 8 weeks. I was fried, really fried. I was an only child, so my parents were quite shattered. And I was told I'd done irreversible damage to my brain. I'd taken one, two drug too many, and I was done. And I was told I'd never be able to take a drink again, and I was had to take medication for the rest of my life. I stopped taking the medication and stayed sober for 6 months and then did it all over again. You know, I'd lost everything and then went and done it all over again. Not because this time was different, but because I needed a drink. I needed a drink. That's an example of what I was like when I was drinking. I didn't have any half measures, I guess. A lot of you guys didn't either. I bounced into these rooms when I was 19, And it was, you know, I had no idea what alcoholism or AA was. I thought it was somewhere that you'd come to be taught how to drink socially. I stayed sober for 12 months and drank again, and then my behaviour was like that when I was drinking. So I came back and I wasn't judged, and I started working the program, not because I wanted to, because I needed to. I was in so much pain. And my first experience with step three, I was raised to be very independent. As I said, I was an only child. If you wanted things done, you did it yourself. I came from a very dysfunctional family as well, so I had to learn to do things on my own. So when it came to depending on a higher power, mainly the main issue was my state of being, and my will had kept me alive to this point. It had kept me alive. I mean, I didn't exactly land on my feet. I ended up in AA, in rehabs and psych units, but it kept me alive. So to just, yeah, okay, God, you take it, was, nah. Until there was a night I caught my girlfriend cheating on me. And that was the first time in sobriety that I'd actually felt like a drink. It was, I was 9 months clean and sober. And I wanted a drink. And my sponsor, I had a sponsor, and it was 2 a.m. in the morning. And I was sitting there contemplating suicide because I knew drinking wasn't an option because I tried it and failed. So the other two options were to go through the steps, take step three, or commit suicide. And I was very serious about those two options, you know. And thankfully at 2 a.m. I rang my sponsor, and he just said, are you ready to take step three? Because you're at that point. And I did. I didn't know what my higher power was. I didn't even care. I just prayed my ass off, and I slept well that night. I went to a meeting the next day, and the following day I broke up with my girlfriend in a socially acceptable manner. I didn't call her on it. I just said, I think it's best if we go our own way. And we're still friends to this day. You know, what she did, maybe because I was a sick person. But, you know, that's her business. So if I fast forward 3 years, I worked this program really well. My sponsor worked me through it really well. I was doing service work. I was talking to newcomers. I was altruistic, and I was giving back what I'd taken. And I became a citizen within society that blended in. You wouldn't recognize me in the street. I was just, you know, and it was great. I even 12-stepped my mother. That was hard. She was real sick. She raised me. I 12-stepped her, and she got 12 months up, and she busted. My sponsor, he busted. And I turned my back on AA. I kept coming to meetings, but I was done with the steps. I think this is bullshit, and I was done with God. So I ran on self-will for 3 years, and I was sober. And in my experience, that's more dangerous than doing it when you've got alcohol in you. Mainly because I was able to get away with shit. Because I was sober, I was more cunning, I was smarter, manipulative. And that's not good. You know, I'd been involved in lots of sticky situations. I'd had the police called on me. I ended up working at the Rockley Markets, which is full of insane criminals. And I worked my way to the top real quick. I was a foreman. I was one of the highest paid labourers in there. And I was working at one of the busiest sections of the markets, and I fitted right in. And then at 6 years sobriety, I quit there. and landed a job at Mercedes-Benz Heavy Commercial Vehicles as an apprentice mechanic, diesel fitter, and it was great. I was there for a year and I got diagnosed with bipolar, which would explain, instead of getting resentful at someone and mouthing off at them, I would get resentful and just, you know, assault them, or just, you know, really nasty piece of work. That's what I was like when I was running on self-will. So, you know, someone talked about hitting brick walls. Well, fuck, that was my brick wall. I hit it hard. And then I came back to the program, started working the steps here, because I knew I was in trouble. And I had a sponsor throughout that time, and I replaced him with another sponsor who was familiar with that sort of stuff. And I started working the steps again. I started working the program again, and it relieved a lot of the pain. You know, I got back on the HADS roster and all that sort of stuff. I got a group in my home. I got a home group again, and started doing service in my home group. Not because I wanted to, because I needed to. I was in a situation where it was quite dire. So I did that and things started going well. Now, I can't sit here and say that I handed my will and my life over to the care of God and everything's been peachy and I've never taken my will back, because that's a lie. I hear people that have done that in the meetings and, yeah, very happy for them. I never used to be, but because I could never get it. But for me, that's just not the case. I took my will back when I was going through a medication detox. Now, the situation was, it was supposed to take 6 weeks. I wanted to do it within a week, and I'd been warned not to do it, but my will and impatientness was like, yeah, fuck it, I got this. And there were so many signs there not to do it, and I just went and did it anyway. 12 hours into that detox, I was in the shower, crying, screaming, and in so much pain. And I got through it, but it caused a trauma, and it caused, you know, I had to go to see a therapist for 6 weeks to get over it. And that's me on self-will. So I've got to be very careful when I run. I don't, you know, when I take things on self-will, it's usually because of a resentment. I go, you know, all right, I got this. I'm going to look after this. Or it's the big things in life that I'm really anxious about and I'm nervous about. Oh, like I said, I revert to type because that sort of behavior kept me alive. So that I just automatically revert to that. My will today is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. If I can't help another alcoholic, I help someone else. If I'm in a meeting and I'm not there to talk to another alcoholic, I wash the dishes. I put some chairs away. It's as simple as that. So self-will or quit playing God. I got experience on both sides of that coin, and just letting God do the work is so much easier. Thanks.
We can just thank all our guest speakers and all those who shared. We have afternoon tea on at 3:30. There's some beautiful scones and jam and cream over there, and some yum yum. 3:30 to 3:30. The next meeting here is at 3:30. It is facing a decision. Ask God, then relax and take it easy. Don't forget, those who have paid for Saturday registration, you can come back for the band. As you can see, they're setting up. They're an awesome band. Dinner, for those who have dinner tickets, will be served here at 6:30. So come back. Beanley meeting at 5, come back and have dinner. Nothing else? Back tomorrow. All right, if we can join in the serenity prayer, holding hands as a symbol that no alcoholic needs stand alone. You can do a circle if you want.